Welcome to Season 2 of Notes from Cancer World. My name is Tina Carter, and I'm your host. I think what qualifies me to host is my multi-year experience dealing with stage 4 colon cancer. My background in chemistry and listening to folks probably also helps. The podcast is meant to provide practical advice to folks in Cancer World and the people who love them. We learned after season 1 that other people may have found this helpful too, and we're glad. As always, take what you need from this free resource. And if you find yourself getting anxious, turn the podcast off. Take some deep breaths. Go outside. Trust yourself. And now, welcome to the episode. Today, we get to talk to Monica from Triage Cancer. She's going to tell us more about what that means. First, though, Monica, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
I'm glad you're here. Can you introduce yourself?
I would be honored. So my name is Monica Bryant. I am a cancer rights attorney and chief operating officer for Triage Cancer, a national nonprofit that provides free education on all of the legal and practical issues that can arise after a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, that's helpful. Do you have any direct experience with Cancer World?
So my experience is multifaceted. Both of my parents are oncology healthcare professionals. So I have been in the oncology space for as long as I can remember.
Wow. Wow. That is a lot. Yeah, that's a lot. So I know a little bit about Triage Cancer because I've looked at your website, I follow you on Facebook, but I imagine most of us don't know anything about your organization. Can you give us a brief kind of synopsis of what y'all do?
Yeah, so Triage Cancer was founded in 2012 to provide people with education on these issues that come up for people once they are dealing with a cancer diagnosis. And those issues really run the gamut from understanding health insurance options to how to navigate health insurance to employment rights, both for the individual who's been diagnosed and for caregivers, disability insurance, estate planning, finances. I often say it's all the topics that someone needs to be able to figure out once they're dealing with a serious medical diagnosis, but typically don't get talked about in a doctor's office.
Yeah, or sometimes even with a social worker. I know that when I was diagnosed stage 4, we were in a huge dilemma about what the heck we were going to do. And it was only because I was super active in the disability community through my other work that one of my friends said, well, maybe you should apply for Social Security disability. Just thinking that it occurred to me. So, and I was super active with my social worker, with paying attention. So what you're saying about those kinds of elements really hits home.
And even when someone is well-versed in these topics, it comes at a time when there's an emotional component to it. It can be very overwhelming. Maybe you're learning more information about medicine and making treatment decisions. So even when someone does have experience or knowledge about these topics, being able to navigate all of it can be incredibly overwhelming. And it's actually where our name comes from. So we want to be able to provide people with enough and accurate information so that they can make the right decisions for them and decide what needs to be dealt with right now and what can maybe wait until later, which is, in fact, the very definition of triage.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that you have a lot of attorneys on staff, and I know that you provide educational like courses, short courses that are free for people to just look at and understand more of what's going on. Do you also have a response center? Like, could a cancer patient call you?
So I mentioned that Triage Cancer provides education on these issues, and we do that in a number of ways. So we do host educational events, and those take on a couple of different forms. So we have monthly webinars that are open to anyone who wants to come and learn. They run between 60 and 90 minutes, depending on the topic. We offer them live. And for healthcare professionals that join any of our events, there's free continuing education. We also record all of those webinars. So that serves a dual purpose. Certainly, if someone is unable to join us live, then they can watch the recording. But then they also continue to live on the website as a resource. So maybe someone at that moment that they find us doesn't need to be talking about disability insurance. So they're not going to watch that webinar. But maybe down the road, that is something they want to learn about. So that webinar lives there for them to access when it's most relevant to them. We also have longer programs, including our Triage Cancer conferences. And for this year, it'll be the first year we actually offer them over 2 days. So there will be additional topics added. And again, those conferences are open to anyone who wants to learn. They're virtual, so you can Zoom in from wherever you happen to be. We do mail out hard copy materials to attendees. And again, it's just an opportunity for someone to spend more time with us and do a deeper dive into some of these topics. And then we also host healthcare professional trainings. So for nurses and social workers and patient advocates, because what we find is they're often on the front lines of getting these questions. And typically these questions come in more of an offhanded comment versus a direct question. So we want to give healthcare professionals enough information about these topics so that they can do something we call in the legal field, which is issue spot. You hear the story of what somebody is coping with, and you, healthcare professional, then start to recognize or spot some issues that might have solutions rooted in the law. So in addition to our events, we have tons of resources available on our website in print. We have quick guides that can be read or printed out, which are a snapshot of a particular topic. We have longer guides. We have animated videos. So we try to really meet people where they are. Sometimes someone only has the capacity to absorb 5 minutes of information. Great. Watch an animated video. Someone wants to do a slightly deeper dive. Maybe a quick guide on a particular topic would be useful. So lots of different ways to try to convey this information because it is complicated many times. We also offer all of that in Spanish as well. To your question about responding individually, one of our newer programs is our Legal and Financial Navigation Program. And over the history of the organization, we didn't really set out to have a call center or a hotline because we wanted to be able to be more systemic in terms of providing this education and this information. But people still called and people still emailed. And we, of course, answered those questions. Our goal is to not hide the ball. In 2020, with the pandemic, those emails and calls only grew, which is so understandable. And so at that point, we realized that we really needed to formalize or institutionalize a program to be able to be more responsive to people. And so this Legal and Financial Navigation Program was born. We don't provide financial assistance or legal representation as an organization, but if someone needs to get answers to their questions, they can fill out a form on our website. They'll get a link to schedule a call with us, and then we get on the phone with them. We try to answer the questions.
I love that. I was a part of 2 phase 1 clinical trials at university hospital setting. As I entered into those clinical trials, they required that I have medical power of attorney and a living will. And the requirement existed, but giving somebody a clue to how to do that did not.
Interesting.
So your organization provides that bridge for us because the healthcare organization clearly can't give you instructions about those things. They can require them, but they can't say, here's how you do them. They might be able to point you in a direction. That's not their wheelhouse, right? They're trying to stay in their lane. But your organization can help
educate us on what those are and how you go about figuring out how to get them.
Absolutely. And it's not just necessarily about like, this is what the form is, although we certainly do explain about that. But we also try to give people the really practical information about things to think about when you're filling out one of those forms. For example, you know, there's a power of attorney for finances and a power of attorney for healthcare. And those are two different forms. Sometimes people might default to it being the same person. But what one of my examples of like the practical pieces is really thinking about the people in your life who would be good at those various roles may not be the same person. I often joke about my husband who calls every pill he takes an aspirin, whether it's a vitamin or an ibuprofen, right? It's everything's an aspirin. He is not the person I'm going to choose to be my healthcare power of attorney, but he's a whiz with numbers. So absolutely, he's my financial power of attorney. So our goal at Triage Cancer is not just to say these forms exist and here's where you can fill it out, but to really give people enough information and things to think about so that, again, they can make the right decisions for them.
And I think that having a resource that helps us understand those things can also help us tunnel out our view a little bit. When we are the cancer patient, we can get kind of stuck on the medical decisions that need to be made, what I need to do, not to puke, whatever. And we can even lose sight of the caregiver that is walking beside us sometimes. And when we have to make these kinds of decisions, I think it's important for us to be able to expand our view to think about not just what we need, but also what our caregiver might need. So in my case, my caregiver is an amazing human and really competent and can focus really well on like one thing, but not on 10 things. So then we have to have a discussion of, well, what do you want to focus on? So having an organization like yours that can help us back up a little bit and look at it from a bigger perspective can also help us be more effective in getting done what we need to get done.
I really appreciate you sharing that. I've never heard that perspective of what we do. So I need to sit with that for a little bit, but I really appreciate you sharing that because that certainly is part of our goal, is to give people the tools, the information, the perspective of the various things that people may need to be thinking about. Sometimes someone will call us with a question about health insurance. So we'll talk to them about, you know, what's going on with their health insurance and X, Y, and Z. But before we get off the phone with them, we might also ask, so how are things at work? And then there's some, you know, people might say like, oh, well, it's actually really challenging. I'm struggling with fatigue or nausea at work. And, you know, maybe my supervisor is being challenging. And that opens the door for us to then talk about what laws and programs might exist to help make work a little bit better. So we rarely end up talking to someone about one thing or answering one question because oftentimes they are intertwined.
Yeah. And we've interviewed at least one employer on the podcast to kind of talk about what she was in HR and what she does. And she is super, super well informed, right? She is an expert and very good at what she does. And she knows what she needs to do to comply with her requirements as an employer. But she's a very generous human, but she may not be thinking in terms of what the employee has a right to, right? Those are two kind of very different things. What's required for compliance, and then what rights we have or can exercise as a person who is employed.
Absolutely. And HR is such an interesting role because they serve two masters, so to speak. Certainly, they are there to be supportive of employees. But to your point, they also have this responsibility to make sure that the employer is complying with their responsibilities. And so it is always an interesting thing. And like with every profession, there are some fantastic HR representatives, and maybe there are some that aren't as forward-thinking. So HR is an interesting component. And I think, too, when we talk about employment rights and things like what exists under the Americans with Disabilities Act, you know, reasonable accommodations, for example, which is any change in the work environment that allows someone to be able to do their job, they're one of the most useful tools for employees who are coping with something like a cancer diagnosis, because they're so flexible and they can really make a huge difference to help people combat side effects, for example, and keep them at work. Oftentimes, when these discussions come up, they aren't always well received by employers. And one of the things we talk about at Triage Cancer is reframing the requests around reasonable accommodations, because there has been a study done over a number of years that shows the cost of reasonable accommodations to the employers are very, very low. In fact, I think it's something around 49% cost the employer absolutely nothing, $0 to provide the accommodation. But the benefit to both the employer and the employee is significant. So it's things like increasing employee productivity, increasing morale among all employees, keeping valued employees, avoiding additional costs for retraining and rehiring. And so when we share that with people, it flips how they think about asking for a reasonable accommodation. And so here we are just explaining what the law says and explaining what a research study found. And it can make all the difference for someone's ability to go in and actually ask for that thing that they need at work. And so that's where we really do try to marry both the legal and the practical together to get people what they need.
And for some of us going through Cancer World, we know that we need to take a break to do cancer. And for some of us, what we really want is to just keep doing our life while we're doing treatment. And so if we're one of those, I just want to keep doing my life people, then getting accommodations can really help us continue to get on with our life.
Absolutely. There is no one size fits all to any of what we talk about. In fact, we often talk about an analogy of puzzle pieces, that each thing we talk to somebody about, each law, each program, each benefit is an individual puzzle piece. And for every single person, what their ultimate puzzle looks like is going to be different, depending on what pieces they have access to and which ones they choose to use. So you're absolutely correct, and it's going to be different for everybody. I think it's also important to acknowledge that not everybody has the luxury of taking the break and just not working. Unfortunately, in this country, the access to paid medical leave is limited. Many people don't have access to that. And many people don't have the luxury of just saying, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to take a break right now. There are many people that need to work, whether that's for a paycheck or for health insurance. But then also to your point, there are also a lot of people who want to work. It's what gives them purpose. It's what gets them through the day. It's the place where they don't have to be the person with cancer. They're just them. So again, we never say to someone, you should do this, or this is your path forward. We're going to just give people all the information about their puzzle pieces and how to make decisions about pros and cons to various paths. And then they get to decide how they want to put those pieces together.
That is so helpful. I know that when I was diagnosed stage 4, my husband's workplace, he filed for FMLA to help kind of get me to treatment, and he wanted to take like blocks, right? So 4 hours on this day and 6 hours on this day. And he actually had to fight to get that format of FMLA, because in the past, this employer had only dealt with FMLA that people took, you know, I'm going to take a month of family leave. And they had not had a situation where they needed this kind of juggling. I wish that we had known about triage cancer in 2016 when we were setting that up.
So for your listeners, just to make sure everyone's on the same page, the FMLA is the Family and Medical Leave Act, which is the federal law that allows some individuals to take job protective leave either for their own serious medical condition or to act as a caregiver for a seriously ill child, parent, or spouse. So I say some individuals because there are eligibility requirements. For example, only private employers with 50 or more employees are bound by the FMLA. So if someone works for a smaller employer, they may not have access to FMLA leave. There are state and local leave laws that we would then look to, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. And then to your point, the FMLA provides eligible employees with 12 weeks of job protected leave in 1 year. Those 12 weeks can be taken in a 12-week chunk. They can also be taken in smaller segments, like I need 3 weeks off for surgery in January, and then I start, you know, radiation or chemotherapy in March, and I need another 3 weeks off then. They can also be taken intermittently, which it sounds like was what your husband was trying to do. And so that's where you have leave approved, where you take it as you need it, up to that 12 weeks. There are definitely nuances and details with using it intermittently, but I think you raise a really important point that sometimes access to a particular benefit is hindered by the employer's experience in those benefits. So I would venture to guess it wasn't that the employer was trying to be malicious in not providing this kind of leave to your husband. It's just that they maybe didn't have the experience with it. And so where triage help cancer can be helpful in those senses is if you would come to us and said, this is what we're up against, we would explain the rule. We would provide those materials back to you. So every time we talk to a caller on the navigation program, we send a follow-up email with links to resources that support what we've shared on the phone. So we know people learn in different ways, and so we want to make sure that we're giving people as much opportunity to absorb that information as possible. And we've had people say, I took in your quick guide to my employer and said, look, this is what I'm asking for. And sometimes just having that sort of third party support or bolster the request can be very meaningful and helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so grateful that triage cancer exists. One of the things I wanted to talk about today was our rights in a medical treatment setting. One of the things I loved about the facility that I went to for my phase one studies is that those rights, patient rights, were in every elevator. They were in every elevator. So you didn't have to find them or memorize them, or every time you got in an elevator, which was every day, you were going to see them. They also posted things like I had to do a live liver biopsy more than once, but they are not fun. And they had big posters on the wall that said, remember, you can say stop or pause, and we will stop or pause. Those kinds of educational tools offered by treatment facilities are very, very helpful. But I also have figured out by going to other facilities for treatment that they're pretty rare, that I guess the medical facilities just assume you know that stuff. But I love that your organization also provides us some background on that as well.
Yeah, and I think it is important to remember, unfortunately, there's often a sense that healthcare providers hold all the power. And we certainly engage with individuals from different cultural backgrounds, from different educational backgrounds. And there's often a hesitancy to question healthcare providers, to be an advocate for yourself in terms of what you do or don't want in a healthcare setting. And And then when we talk to healthcare providers, it's usually the opposite. Of course, I want my patients to talk about these things. And of course, I want them to tell me, you know, what they're experiencing and if they're uncomfortable and side effects. And because we would address all of those things. And so really, our message is there needs to be more communication on both ends, that providers should certainly be making it very clear to their patients that they welcome questions and input and that there should be shared decision making in this whole process. But then also from a patient caregiver side, I always hesitate to say we want to empower people because I don't think someone's power comes from me giving it to them. But we certainly want to encourage people to use their voice and be self-advocates to talk about what they need and ask questions. And if they don't get the answer they're looking for or they don't understand the answer, to keep asking those questions.
And maybe in some cases, it might be reminding people, because something weird happens when you're diagnosed with cancer and you have 1,800 decisions to make and all of them are important. And your brain just kind of goes into triage mode, right? Yes. And some of the things that you would have naturally done, you know, inquisitiveness that you have as a natural person, kind of gets shoved to the back because you're in survival mode. So I love that you encourage or remind us that participation, our participation, will lead to a better outcome in most cases.
Absolutely. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, even outside of sort of that cancer crisis moment, even when I'm sitting in a doctor's office, I may have walked in with 15 questions. The doctor comes in, we start chatting, and all of a sudden the door's closing and I didn't ask one of my questions. And so I think that happens, unfortunately, more often than not, even outside of sort of this crisis moment. And so, you know, we talk about some practical tips around that, you know, making sure people are writing down questions and using the tools at their disposal. My favorite thing is, if you have a smartphone, putting the doctor's appointments in your calendar. And then as questions come up in your brain, you know, you're standing in the grocery line or you're waiting in the waiting room, you type those questions into the notes section. And then you sit with your phone waiting for the doctor to come in. And you make sure before that doctor leaves, you're like, I have questions and here are my questions. And you go down the list. Some of those really sort of practical tips may be completely obvious to some people, other people maybe not. And so that really is the goal at Triage Cancer, is what best kept secrets, what tips and tricks can we provide in addition to concrete, accurate information about the law?
Yeah, one of the tricks that I've talked about with several persons that are going through Cancer World is to look, if there's a procedure that's coming up, to look at the person, the physician, the anesthesiologist, the nurse, and say, what can I expect to happen in the next 4 hours, right? And you're going to get a different answer from each of those people. And none of the answers are going to be wrong. They're just going to give you information from different perspectives. And that can help you as a person receiving care to adjust your head so that if you wake up and your throat hurts, you go, oh yeah, I was intubated. That's kind of part of the deal. And you don't think there's something else wrong with me, right?
I love that. I think that is phenomenal advice. And if you don't mind, I'm going to add that to my toolbox of things to share with people, because I think that's so fascinating to think about the fact that every professional in your care team is coming at this from a different perspective and has a different job to do. And you're in the center of that. Love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So I'm glad you guys exist, but what is the story of how you got founded?
So I mentioned that my parents are both oncology healthcare professionals. My sister, Joanna Duran, who is also a cancer rights attorney, and I have been in the cancer space since as long as I can remember. We're both attorneys, and we both really believe strongly that knowledge is power, and that we wanted to do our part for the cancer community. And the way we figured out we were going to do that was by creating an organization that focused on helping people gain that knowledge.
That's amazing.
And here we are.
It's amazing. And I have to say, it's a little stunning because most of the people that I've interviewed from nonprofit organizations, have gotten involved in Cancer World because they have gone through Cancer World or somebody that they love has gone through Cancer World. And so your story is slightly unique among the people that I've interviewed because your experience is coming from your parents treating people who are in Cancer World, right? So you've been a part of the ecosystem for a long time.
Yep. And we've been involved in a lot of different ways. I mean, from early days of ACS relays to, you know, Komen runs. And I think fundamentally, our parents raised us with a perspective that we all have a responsibility to try to make the world a better place. Now, we're all going to do that in different ways. We all have our different skills and tools in our toolbox. This thing that Joanna and I chose to do is simply our way of trying to make the world just a little bit better each day. And I think the unfortunate reality is so many people are going to be impacted by cancer in one way or another that it's going to touch each one of us at some point, whether it's our own diagnosis or somebody that we love or somebody in our community. And ultimately, we believe that someone should be able to survive, even for a moment with this diagnosis, while also being able to keep their jobs, keep their homes, keep their families, and that there are things out there that can be helpful. People just need to understand how to access them.
Yeah. I went through training. American Cancer Society has a new program called ACS Cares. It's an app, and you can go through a lot of training and sign up to be somebody that can receive like questions or
like as a navigator.
Yeah, as a non-medical navigator, right? So it's just a touch point person, really. But one of the things they train us on is to be able to search for resource materials within the American Cancer Society kind of world, which is pretty extensive, and then send a link to those articles to the people that need it so that they aren't overwhelmed by all of the crap on the internet. You can just send them one article. And that's why I like Triage Cancer, is that you can kind of choose. For many of us, the thought of sitting through a webinar to get information is like, that is not going to work. But
right.
You have many possibilities for getting information. And that's helpful, I think.
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, we are constantly trying to be flexible and nimble in how we provide the information. So, you know, is it coming on fantastic podcasts like this one to try to reach people who may have these questions but didn't know we existed? You know, every year as a nonprofit, we do a reconciliation process where we look at, you know, who did we reach last year? Where were they? What types of cancer did they have? And for the last several years, we have reached more than 1 million people each year, which
that's amazing.
It feels amazing. But when we stop and think about the fact that there are 18 million cancer survivors in this country and growing every year, unfortunately, we have barely scratched the surface. And so we also welcome feedback. You know, a lot of the quick guides that we've created have come from either a healthcare professional who's reached out or an advocate who's reached out that says, you know, I keep getting questions on X. It'd be so helpful for me to have something to hand someone. And so we say, okay, and we create it. You know, obviously in our lane around the laws and practical issues, because there's so much wonderful information about the medical side of it. We want to be able to make sure there is equally wonderful, accurate information about all of these other things. And the internet, while it is a wonderful tool, can also be, oh my gosh, overwhelming, detrimental. The same is true sometimes for things like online support groups or forums. You know, on the one hand, they are so incredibly powerful to connect people with like experiences, to get that support. There is also so much misinformation out there.
Well, and I'll tell you a story, and I'll probably edit this out, but I'm in a very good, very big online support group. And 2 days ago, somebody posted and said, okay, here's my situation and here's what I need. I need stories from people who have experienced this. I do not need advice. I do not need you to tell me what to test next. I do not. She went through the whole list of what she didn't need. There were 74 responses. Okay. And until I responded, two people had offered stories. And 72 people had offered advice or where you should get tested or. And it's just what you're talking about. Sometimes you can't even get what you need in an online forum, even if you really know what you need.
And again, here we have 74 well-intentioned human beings who are trying to be supportive in the best way that they know how. And all of that advice and suggestions that they were giving her may have been 100% the best choice for them.
Right.
But I would venture to guess that she did not include every piece of information in her post that would ensure that those next action steps were actually the best thing for her. And so we hear stories all the time of someone calling and saying something like, you know, my cancer diagnosis is on the compassionate allowances list, so I'm going to get approved for Social Security disability insurance immediately. And we have to share that that is not, in fact, reality. And, you know, here's what that list is. And there's a waiting period. No, no, I was told because my diagnosis is on the list. And so we end up having to not only combat explaining a complicated system, we have to combat the misinformation. And so, again, we really love advocates and navigators who are in those groups who can also say, you know, maybe I'm not even going to give you the answer, but here's a link where you could go read more.
Right. And this link has been prepared. This website is actually staffed by people who are experts.
Right. The other thing that's so challenging about the internet is it's global.
Yeah.
And so you could have someone from Florida who doesn't have access to the same things that someone in California might have by virtue of what's available in their states. Or you might have someone who's on Medicare for their health insurance giving advice to someone who's getting employer-sponsored health insurance. And the rules and what they have access to is just going to be different. We often joke at Triage Cancer that we can't answer a straight question because anytime someone asks us a question, we have to respond by asking about 10 to 15 questions of them before we can have enough information to be able to sort through what they might actually have access to. So things like employer size and state and household size and income level are all going to impact what somebody's options are.
And that reminds me, I've already put a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode apologizing to our European listeners that this episode has nothing to do with you, but I will, if you have ventured into this episode, I will once again say, I'm sorry, we're dealing with legal issues within the country of the United States of America, and this probably has nothing to do with y'all.
We do have some resources, international resources on our website. Of course, the laws, just like from state to state, the laws are going to be different. The laws from country to country are going to be different. But I would say there are some pieces that are going to be universal. So things around thinking through who you want to make medical decisions for you. That's a universal topic. Now, the vehicles in which you're going to document that are different from country to country and even from state to state. But some of those more practical things are applicable. When I talk to people from other countries, they're generally pretty shocked at how challenging it is to navigate the American healthcare system and the lack of robustness of employment protections, because generally other countries do have a more simplified system and more protections for employees, but the issues are generally the same.
That's really a good point. I may actually leave off that disclaimer at the beginning of the episode. Some of us avoid dealing with legal issues at all. Somehow we think that if we think about any of them, our mortality will be made real and then something catastrophic will happen. And that's just, you know, for humans. I wonder if you have found a way to help people kind of get over that hump.
If you're referring specifically to the issues around estate planning and medical decision making, unfortunately, most people have not completed the documents that I personally think people over the age of 18 should have, because it's a hard topic, whether they're the cancer diagnosis or not. No one really wants to think about death.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to think about for most people. When I spend a lot of time educating around estate planning, and when I talk about estate planning, I typically start with the idea that there is something that is going to happen to each and every one of us. It is 100% unavoidable. Certainly, we hope that thing, being the fact that we're going to pass away, is a long time in the future. But none of us have a crystal ball, and none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow. So thinking about estate planning differently can be really helpful. Whenever I see estate planning being mentioned as something that should be an end-of-life discussion, I cringe. It is absolutely not an end-of-life discussion. This is about preparing, planning for the inevitable. And so I literally say there are four documents everyone over the age of 18 should have. Cancer diagnosis or not, everyone over the age of 18, which is the age of legal majority in most states, should have four basic estate planning documents. And that's a will, which deals with what's going to happen to your property and guardianship of minors. A power of attorney for financial affairs, which is where you're going to name an agent to make financial decisions for you if you're unable to. Say you get in a car accident and you're unconscious. Who's going to pay your mortgage? Who's going to pay the medical bills? Then there's something that is often referred to as a living will. I don't love that name because I think it's confusing for a lot of people. It's instructions for healthcare. So this is where you get to write down what you do or don't want in a situation if you're unable to express it, right? Like, do you want blood transfusions? My instructions for healthcare are very clear that there needs to be adequate pain management. I don't want to be in pain. So my healthcare team needs to know that. And then finally, a power of attorney for healthcare. And this is what we talked about earlier, where you're naming someone to make medical decisions for you. Everyone over the age of 18 should have these documents. You mentioned that it's hard to think about these things and how do I help people try to get over that hump? First, I start with, it's something that's going to happen to all of us at some point. And then I also try to help people, again, reframe what we're talking about. There's lots of reasons why someone should plan their estate. So there might be financial reasons for it. There's peace of mind that you know that what your wishes are going to be carried out. But at the end of the day, I actually think planning an estate is one of the most loving things that you can do for your friends and family.
Yep.
It is the kindest, most thoughtful, loving thing that you can do. Because here's the reality. When I pass away, the people that I love in my sphere are going to be grieving, because presumably they love me back. And if I don't take the time and do the work to plan my estate, I am dumping all of that on them to deal with at a time when they're also dealing with their own grief. And so that would be very selfish of me, actually, if I just said, well, I don't want to deal with it because it's too hard. So I'm going to make them deal with it when I'm not here anymore. Now, if none of those reasons resonate with someone, I then also say, you know, the thing that got me over the hump was the idea that I'm a very type A person and I like to be in control of things. And so creating my estate plan was my last opportunity to be in control, even when I'm not here anymore.
That's hilarious. I love that. Monica, you have been so generous with your time. And I love that Triage Cancer works in educating both patients, but also medical professionals, social workers, so that you are bringing us kind of enough information that we can make competent decisions or competent recommendations. I love what your organization does. Is there something that I have failed to ask you that you want to make sure we talk about?
I don't think so. Again, I just really appreciate the opportunity to come and chat and to hopefully expose the organization to others out there that might need the information. I will just mention that everything we've talked about today is available for free and can be accessed at triagecancer.org. I'm sure you'll link in the show notes would be great. You know, and our website's organized in a couple of different ways. So it's organized by the various events. It's organized by resources. So that's going to be things like the animated videos or our legal and financial navigation program. And then it's also organized by materials. So that's going to be anything that you can read. Again, you can read it online. You can print out anything that you'd like to see hard copy. We've got some worksheets and checklists that sometimes are easier to use sort of pen and paper. And if there are healthcare professionals listening in, you can also order bulk hard copies of our educational materials and we will ship them to you in the US for free.
Wow. That is amazing. Monica, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really admire what you are doing with this podcast and appreciate you reaching out and the opportunity to chat.
Thanks for joining us for this episode. If you want more information, you may find it at notesfromcancerworld.org. If there's something you want to know about or someone you would like us to interview, feel free to email us at notesfromcancerworld@gmail.com. And as always, remember to hydrate, trust yourself, and if someone offers to do your laundry, let them.